you have time to look at it. Okay, ready to go? Okay, good morning. We continue in Sefer Shoftim, Perek Zayin. We just finished Pasuk Yudalid, where Hashem, in this last segment, after reducing Gidon's troops to 300 troops, and Hashem senses that Gidon will be scared, so Hashem says, go down and listen to what they're saying. And once you hear what they're saying, you'll be strengthened. So we just started this. Let's continue this idea of what the purpose of this was. Yes?
One comment.
Yeah.
It's curious to me that when Devorah asked for troops, she only managed to get 10,000, I believe it was, right? Wasn't it? He asked for troops, and he's a weaker guy. He's not even a shoftim and nothing, and he gets 32,000. Everybody comes. Why the difference? And she had problem getting people. He seems to send them away. A big difference here.
I'd have to go back and check exactly what the circumstances for that were.
She had to rebuke afterwards tribes who didn't show up. And he's got more than he needs. That's very, very unusual situation. And why wouldn't people listen to her and listen to him?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have to think about that. I mean, the generation was very weak. Listen, the fact that a woman had to be the leader showed you overall the Jews were not, even the men weren't strong.
They were very strong here either. They were worshiping idols.
You could still be strong, but you're worshiping idols. I'd have to look back over that.
They weren't that far years-wise from the other.
Well, it was already.
10 years.
No.
From Dvorah to Gidon?
Not that many years.
No, not that many years. Anyway, okay.
Have to think what the differences are. Okay, it's a good question. Have to figure out what the reason would be for that. So, why does Hashem, first of all, why is Hashem allowed to do what he's doing over here? There is a prohibition in the Torah of Lo Senachashu. You're not allowed to look for signs. If a black cat goes under a ladder, you don't go out today, or things like that. You're not supposed to say, well, if this and this happens, then it's a sign that Hashem wants me to do this and this and that. This whole business is not allowed. The reason why you're not allowed to do that is because you're looking for outside verification of things that should be happening, and really you're just supposed to put your trust in Hashem. So why is this seems to be that similar thing where, you'll hear what they're going to say, oh, that's a good sign, oh, then you're going to feel comfortable to go to battle. It's really not allowed to do. So as we mentioned yesterday, just at the end, so that's really Rabbeinu Bechaya says, you're right, Gidon maybe would not have been able to do it on his own, but Hashem told him to do it. So once Hashem tells you to do that, then it's okay. And why did Hashem tell him to do it? Because he understood how Gidon didn't rely on his own mitzvahs, and he figured he wasn't that great. And Hashem appreciated the fact that Gidon was extremely humble and thought he wasn't so great. So Hashem says, I have to give him a little bit of support, so I will give it to him. And when Hashem tells you to do it, it's similar to when you do it yourself. You on your own say, I don't know, I'm going to try to figure out a way to figure out if I'm going to win or not. As opposed to Hashem saying, no, I'm doing it because this is what I want to do to strengthen you for that. That's number one. Number two, the Drash HaSaran discusses this when he talks about, for example, the Nihushim, predictions or whatever of, let's say, Eliezer and Yonatan. Eliezer says, same thing. Whoever draws water for me, this one I'll know will be the wife for Yitzhak. How can you do that? So Ron says the difference between just making Stam a test that really doesn't relate to the reality at hand, but just looking for a sign, as opposed to doing something that is a logical understanding of the situation. In other words, if Eliezer would say, you know, the first girl who walks down with a blue dress is the one for Yitzchak, so that's ridiculous. What kind of thing is that? But if he says the first girl who shows exemplary chesed, and I'm going to ask for water, and she's going to give to my camels, that's the one for Yitzchak, that's not just pulling out a sign out of the hat. That is indicative of who should be the person who Yitzchak should marry. So that's not, you know, considered like sorcery or guesswork or making predictions based on foolishness. That's a reality. Who is Yitzchak has to marry? Someone has to marry someone who has the attribute of chesed. That's only going to be the right shidduch for him. So if that one will come up, oh, that's a sign from Hashem that this is the one because she has the qualities that's necessary. So the same thing over here. If these fellows are going to mention that they're scared of Gidon and think they're going to lose, so guess what? That's a good sign that they're going to lose. As we know, people don't dream about things unless it's what's on their mind. As Gemara says, you only dream about things that's on your mind. So how can a guy dream about something that's going to be the dream of their defeat unless they really believe that they were going to be defeated? So therefore, this is not, you know, totally a ridiculous, non-reality-based sign. It's a sign really based on what is on the ground and what's going to happen. Okay. So then he told over the dream. He explained the dream to him, and the soldier said to him, "This is for sure means we're going to lose." So the question we also left off yesterday with another point about the barley bread. It was a barley bread in the dream that rolled and destroyed the Midianite camp. So what's the aspect of the barley bread? And as well, we mentioned in Pasuk Gimel there was a kri uksiv. Again, look back in Pasuk Gimel, right in the middle of the Pasuk, it says, Vihine, and the letters are written, Sadi Lamed Vav Lamed, but it is read, Salil, as if it has a Yud. So the Medrash picks up on this, and the Medrash says, what's the barley? The barley is representative of the mitzvah of the Omer barley offering that's brought on the day after the first day of Yom Tov of Pesach. And then it talks about the dream. So it says, Mahu tzlil lechem so'orim. What does it mean, a tzlil lechem so'orim? So Rabbanan say, Al shitzolal aleihem oso hador mina tzadikim. The generation was tzolal from tzadikim. Tzolal, now the ksiv, the way it's written is tzolul. Tzolul means clear and empty. The generation was empty from tzadikim. So since it was empty from tzaddikim, that's why they were suffering. And then the man says, "Ubischus manitzulo." So in what merit were they saved? In the schus of the barley offering, of the omer barley offering. And then we read the word tzalil from the expression of hatzalah, to be saved. So that's when you have a kriyuksiv, to give you two understandings. That what actually happened is it was a bread of salvation, but we needed the bread of salvation because we were tzolul, we're empty from tzaddikim, and therefore it had to be restored through the mitzvah of the Omer. So the question that's still left to be asked is, so like, how does that work exactly? And we mentioned all the similarities to the story of Purim. All the similarities, how v'nahapachu, things turned over. That's what the pasuk says, the tent was turned over. And we learned how Mordechai was teaching the boys the very night that everything turned over. He was teaching the children the laws of the Omer. So we could look at two things. Number one, if you look in the Sefer HaChinuch, he explains the reason for this mitzvah. Very interesting. He says the root of the mitzvah, why do we bring a barley offering on the second day of Pesach? So the Sefer HaChinuch says, so we should reflect of the great kindnesses that Hashem does to His creation, that every year He restores and renews the crops. Every year is a brand new miracle. where the crops grow from the ground, vegetation grows. And therefore, it's fitting for us to bring from that to Hashem, so we should remember His tremendous kindness and goodness to us before we benefit from it. In other words, to say, all this blessing, really, it's coming from you, and we're giving you the first of the barley, so that the harvest should be a successful harvest, and we recognize it all comes from you. And then, they will be worthy for the bracha by these actions, and the fields will be blessed, and the desires of Hashem will be completed, and He'll be happy with us, that He wants to give us a lot. And He'll give us a lot because we show that we're grateful for what He is providing for us, and therefore the blessings will come to us. In a minute, I have to finish this first, then you could ask. Just hold on. Just finish the point. So the parshios, he asks, same parshios, that's an interesting question. He says, well, that's good to explain the mitzvah, but it didn't seem, the point of the mitzvah didn't seem operative. Why? Because we already learned that yes, Hashem brought a lot of crops, but what were the Midianim doing? They're eating it like locusts. So there wasn't anything to sustain them. There was nothing to look forward to of the upcoming crop. So there's nothing to look forward to, then what's the point of doing the mitzvah? The whole point of doing the mitzvah is we'll bless the crop. But if the crop, there's no crop. So, but still they did the mitzvah, even though there was no hope that they were going to be blessed from that. So what did that generation learn? There were a generation who did bad in the eyes of Hashem, but the bottom line is doing mitzvahs doesn't really depend on the reasons of the mitzvah. And therefore they merited to be saved dafka with this mitzvah, because again, as the Sefer Chinuch says, even though it's regarding to the crops, but he says, "Mitoch shenia ruuyim lebracha behechsher masem." We should be fit for the blessing through improving our ways. Tisparch tzvoseinu, our grain will be blessed. So interesting. So it comes out they're doing a mitzvah that really the reason doesn't apply to the mitzvah, and then they're doing it. So then obviously there must be another point to the mitzvah. There has to be a deeper aspect of the mitzvah where you do the mitzvah even though the reason doesn't apply for what we think applies. So the Maral talks about this as well, and he makes a connection between Purim and Gidon. And he says the concept of the Omer is that Hashem can control even the most coarse food. Barley is the most coarse food. And it's animal feed. It's not people, although we eat barley, but it's mainly for animals. So Hashem can control even the most coarse food and can be used for Hashem's purposes. You could take that and you bring it for a korban. So therefore, you know, God has all kinds of use for nature. So similarly, the Jewish people should learn that they're not subject to the laws of nature. So Hashem can overturn the most coarse and resistant things for His needs. And that's the idea of v'ahapachu, to turn it upside down. For things that you think may not be so useful in this world, they are very useful in the world. And therefore He can turn around situations. And that's the whole idea. And that really is the turnaround of the Jew. And that's the deeper understanding of why we bring the Omer offering. The deeper understanding, you have to remember, as we explained in a Parsha class many moons ago, that, you know, there's a lot of focus on agriculture in the Torah. A lot of focus on agriculture. Look at all the holidays, there's always an agricultural component to it. You almost would think that the Jews, you know, their worship was based on their agricultural society, which we don't have anymore, so the worship shouldn't apply anymore. So the answer is no. Because if you think about it, what is the whole idea of growing food in the ground? Well, we know that man is the tree of the field. Man is the tree of the field. And man learns more about himself when as a farmer than as an urban person. You know, you plant in the ground, you're making efforts, and then you see something comes out of it. So, you know, a farmer has a lot of stress. He has a lot of stress. He puts seeds in the ground, seeds that could be used, really, he could use those seeds to mill those seeds and make bread. And what's he doing? He's cutting down on his own bread by planting it in the ground with the hope that it'll rain, with the hope that bread will come out. And if it doesn't rain, you're going to starve to death. So there's a lot of tension when the farmer puts those seeds in the ground. And what happens is he makes all his efforts, and then he sees Baruch Hashem in the springtime. Oh, look, the grain's coming up. Oh, there's a good chance we're going to get something really good. But the most stressful time, as we said, is going to come right in the springtime, because then we're going to have to harvest it. And the harvest is so critical, because you could do all the work. You could do all the work. It's a lot of work. Plowing is heavy work. Planting, tending to the crops as they're growing. It's a lot of work. Now you're coming right to the final thing. Final thing is the harvest. And if you mess up on the harvest, then the whole thing is lost. The whole thing is lost. So similarly, what a Jew goes through during the year, trying to grow spiritually. And we know on Pesach, especially, there's a tremendous gift that Hashem gives all of us on Pesach. On the night of Pesach, Hashem shows us all the spiritual potentials that we're capable of achieving. You know, you've been an Eved Hashem from Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, for the last 5-6 months, and hopefully been working on your Avodas Hashem, and you've been learning and davening and this and that, and now we're coming on to a greater part of the year. We're coming to Pesach, Shavuos. And now we're going to maybe see what's going to happen with all our efforts. What's going to happen from all the davening, all the getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, all the work on trying to keep Shabbos better. So we're plugging away from Sukkot till Pesach. This one, it's the work. The rain is coming. We're working on the fields. We're trying to make things work out. So now comes Pesach. So on Pesach, what happens is Hashem gives us all a gift. Hashem gives us a gift where He shows us what our spiritual capabilities could finally reach to this year. What we're really capable of achieving. From all the hard work that we made, you know, you're just about there. As if Hashem shows you a bountiful crop ready to be harvested. From all the efforts you'd put in the last 6 months, you know, have you achieved a higher level? Have you achieved a level that 7 weeks from now on Shavuos is going to come the time to receive your own new Kabbalah Satorah again? We come around to Shavuos, that's the highlight of the year. What's that? Say, look what you've grown. Look what you've achieved. Look how much Torah Hashem is going to give you for the coming year. It's all from what you've been doing for the last 7-8 months. So the real conclusion of the harvest is what? Is Shavuos. Because now, how do you know? Well, let's see what happens on Shavuos. Shavuos, where there's no external props for Yiddishkeit, there's no shofar, there's no menorah, there's no sukkah, there's no matzahs, there's no nothing. Let's see what kind of Yid you are. How much learning you're going to do, Shavuos. That really tells us it tells us a lot about the last 9 months. It says if the year's been a productive year or not. How do you know it's been a productive year? Take a look at Shavuos. Person just sleeps the whole Shavuos away, not a very good crop this year. The person mamish spends the whole day learning mamish non-stop, then you know, and you hope from one Shavuos to the next you see significant growth. Yeah, so if a guy, you know, started to learn Gemara this year, comes Shavuos night, he could start learning a few pages of Gemara. Wow, is that a harvest? Eh? And then the guy's schmoozing in a hallway between the cheesecake and the coffee and everything else, and you know, hearing a couple words from a lecture here and a couple words there. So what you come from the whole Shavuos? Nah, I don't know, didn't come away with much Torah. It's a pretty bad crop. So there's a tremendous amount of tension. On Pesach, Hashem says, listen, based on what you did and what your potentials are, look, I'm going to give you a vision of what you could be, of what the harvest could be. So, of what you spiritually can cultivate. So that's what happens on Pesach. And that's exactly what the farmer is seeing when he looks at his field. He looks at his field and says, look at the crop. It's ready to come. Ah, but now it's the lack. So with all that work I did, but still comes 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuos, that's the harvest time. Now you got to really, really make it happen. As hard as you work till now, you got to work even harder to bring all the crop in. And if you slack off now, then all the work is wasted. And the greatest tragedy is to see what you could have been and what you lost. And that's the same thing the farmer goes through. As the Gemara says, there's many terrible winds and many terrible blights and many terrible locusts that can destroy your field. Even you see it's a beautiful field on Pesach, wham! And before you can harvest it, it can all be gone. So the farmer who has that same fear of that all the work would be wasted unless he works really hard to bring it in, so the Jew has that same fear. And that's the real message. That's the real message. And that's the real message of bringing the Omer offering. The Omer offering is a barley offering for an animal. But on Shavuos, it's not a barley offering. It's a regular wheat flour offering. That's human food. And the hope is, let's see how much you've grown in this period of time. And that's the scary part. So that's the real mitzvah. It's the real mitzvah of the Omer, is saying, I'm bringing the first crop because Hashem, it came from you. And I acknowledge it comes from you, and I want to finish it off and be the recipient for it so I can love you. And that's all for your crops. But what about your spiritual crops? That's the same thing that has to happen. So what happens if there isn't real physical crops? So what? You still bring the Omer because the message is still just as powerful. What do you need the regular crops for? And that's, you know, what the Jews, you know, some of the Jews were starting to see. And that's certainly what Gidon saw. You see, that's what Gidon was complaining to the Malach. He says, what are you telling me? We're going to have a salvation? Are you crazy? Listen, look how terrible things are. But he still said, but we learned about on Pesach that we got saved. And he still had a certain bitachon, he was hoping it would happen one day. So obviously, even though they were idolaters, but he still felt connected to that. So he grew on that Pesach. He saw that vision of what he could be. He was from that group who felt to bring the Omer offering. There were many people who were empty, but there are those who says, even if we're empty, but we have a potential to grow. So even if it's not in the crops, but still, that aspect is still there. And that was the schus. And that's what Hashem can take very coarse things and make them unbelievably useful. So that's the same thing with the Purim story was. Purim story, there was not even a Beis HaMikdash. So was it pay to learn? Was it pay to learn the halachas of the Omer? There's no Beis HaMikdash, we're not even going to bring it. The answer is it has nothing to do with the farming. The farming is just a mashal, an allegory to make it more real. To know when you're working on the field, when you go out to the field, you're working on the field of your own self. Okay, I don't have the field. We don't even have the mitzvah. We still have it in the Torah. And we learn it in the Torah, and we read it in the Torah, we pick up the message. So that was what really Gidon really was. He was like this Omer offering who saw the potential that was there. And Hashem saw there was a lot of potential in Gidon. He had to nurture that potential. Gidon had to work on himself to be who he was. And therefore, that merit of the Omer offering, even though there were many people who were not necessarily so scholarly, and it was not overall such a great generation, but still, you know, we do it even though it doesn't make sense, but we look for the deeper spiritual message from it. So that's how they were able to be saved. So that's the shot over there. Okay, moving on. Tesvav. So now, yes, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, you had a question. I'm sorry, thank you. On Pesach, after the first day of Pesach, you're allowed.
The day of Pesach, you're offering this body, but you're not supposed to eat. You're not supposed to eat grain during Pesach.
Why not?
You don't eat grain.
You can eat grain. You can't eat chametz. Chametz is when you take the grain and you make it into flour, and then you mix it with water, and then that is chametz. Barley alone, a barley from the ground, is not chametz. It's not chametz.
The student doesn't follow because barley is, you can eat barley. Are you suggesting you can eat barley?
You could eat a piece of barley. That's not chametz. The only thing you cannot eat, you can't, right? Matzah is made from grain.
You could technically,
a piece of barley is not chametz. Chametz is when you take flour and mix it with water and let it rise for 18 minutes. That's the only thing you can't eat on Pesach. Okay? But if you wanted to take a piece of barley from the ground and eat it, why not?
You're talking about a bread which was made.
We're talking about the barley offering. It's a barley offering. It wasn't.
But the dream was a bread.
The dream, you can dream about bread on Pesach.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
You can dream about whatever you wanted. I'm sure many of you are dreaming about bread on Pesach.
That's right.
But the barley offering was just barley. There's no chametz there.
Okay.
That's not a problem. That's not a problem.
Yeah, you can make soup with
barley and Pesach. Well, no, it's already... No. No. There's other issues. There's other issues. But the pure barley offering was not chametz. Was not chametz.
Just the raw barley. That's about
that's just raw barley. That's all.
Can't do anything.
Okay. Okay, Tesvav. So now, okay, we're on Tesvav. Vayehi kishmo Gidonis mispar hachalom veshifro. And when Gidon heard the retelling of the dream and the interpretation of the dream, vayishtochu, and he bowed down to thank Hashem. Vayoshev amachane Yisrael, he returned to the Jewish camp. Vayomer, and he says, "Kumu, get up! Kinasan Hashem beyedchem esmachane Midyan. Hashem has given into your hands the camp of Midyan." And now he gives them the battle plans. Okay, in the next couple of psukim, the Malbim will describe for us in these psukim that Gidon gives them 8 steps in their battle plan of what to do to be successful in battle. And again, a lot of this is working on the element of surprise, deception, and all these other things that are going on. So that he'll be able to fool the Midianites, so that the miracle will happen via human effort, but still incredibly miraculous. So let's see all the steps over here. So first we'll read it quickly, and then we'll see what's going on over here. Tezayin. Vayachas eshlosh meyosa ishlosh arushin. First he divides the 300 people into 3 groups of 100 each. He gives a shofar, a trumpet, into everybody's hand. Vekadim reikim, and empty pots in their hands. Velapidim besocha kadim, and torches inside the pots. In which you have a pot, a bowl, whatever, and you invert it, and you put the torch inside. Okay, so what's that accomplishing? It's hiding the light that the torch can provide. Okay. Vayomer aleihem, and he said to them, Mimeni tiru, look at me, v'chein tasu, and so you will do the same thing. V'ne'enochi ba b'kzeh machaneh, I will come to the edge of the camp, v'yo kasher asekein, and when I do what I do, tasu, you'll do what you do. Pasuk yuches, v'togati b'shofar, anochi v'chol asherti, I will blow the shofar, and the one-third group that's with me will do that. Utekatem b'shofros kamatem, and you will blow the shofar svivos kalmach around the camp. V'amartem, and then you will scream out, LaHashem uleGidon, for Hashem and for Gidon. So the Malbim goes through these 3 psukim, and he says there's 8 steps over here. Step number 1 is that he divided the camp into 3 groups. So there's 3 ways to surround the enemy. Now why didn't they do 4 groups? The answer is, in all Jewish battles, you have to afford the enemy an escape route. It's halach. You have to afford them an escape route in case they want to run away and never come back. Again, we don't really want to kill them. If we have a way... What?
Unless they're
Amalek. But if they run, never be seen again, that's all could get. You know, it's also fine. We don't have to kill them all. So you surround them and you beat them up, and they see there's an escape route, and just chase them till they just get out of the country. And go far, far away, never be seen again. But there's the idea of an ambush, obviously. Number 1. Number 2, they put shofars in their hands, as we'll see when they'll blow the shofar, make a lot of noise, and that will confound the enemy. Number 3, you have the torches that will provide light for them, but they're in these empty jugs, whatever. Why? So that it'll be a sudden. When they're gonna break the jugs, there'll be an instant all around. They'll see 300 lights, which will give the enemy the impression that they're great. You know, each leg would represent a regiment to make it seem as many more people that are there, and also this sudden flash of light. It's not like you see the light at a distance, and it's a small light. Oh, we got time till the enemy comes. You know, our scouts see at a distance they're coming, but no, they're right at the edge. And how could it be that all of a sudden you have the torches right there, and the shofar is just blowing? It's a sneak attack. And we don't have time to get ready. It's always the element of surprise is critical. If you know your enemy's coming from a distance and you got 2 hours to prepare, you get yourself ready. If all of a sudden you wake up, boom, and the enemy is right in your camp, you're too scared before you start, and you do things quickly without thinking, well, that'll cause all kinds of problems. So this heightens the element of surprise by the fact that they're able to conceal the light until the moment that they need it. And it says, nobody do anything until I do it, as I come to the edge of the camp. So it will all be simultaneously. It won't be, you'll see a couple lights and a few more lights, just 301 shot. And everything that I do, you will do. And part of that is blowing the shofar, and you will blow the shofar as well around the camp. So they'll think there's many camps all around, and they think they're vastly matched with lots of people. And then you scream out LaHashem ul'Gidon. And now, to show there's an aspect of a miracle that's happening through Gidon's efforts, and that's what the Targum also says on Pasuk Ches when they say LaHashem ul'Gidon. So, and you'll see later on, it's not only the words LaShem LeGidon. You'll see they say a little bit more. The Targum says, Charba de miktalo min kodom Hashem. The sword that destroys comes from Hashem. V'nitzchon al yidei Gidon. And the victory is attributed to Gidon. That's what you call out. In other words, don't forget, as you're fighting the war, keep telling yourself what the emes is. The emes is LaHashem LeGidon. It's Hashem is the one who's destroying everybody, and Gidon's going to get the credit. But because he was courageous enough to be the vehicle of Hashem doing this. But it's really going to be Hashem. And that's the instructions he gives the troops. Okay, Pasuk Yutes. Vayavo Gidon u'mea isha sheri tobi tzea machane, rosh ha'ashmoras ha'tichona. So Gidon and 100 of his troops that are with him, they come to the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch. Now the night is divided up into 3 watches. Right, the beginning of the night, the middle of the night, the end of the night. So let's say a typical night goes from 6 to 6, let's say, and this would work as Pesach time. So in Eretz Yisrael, sunset's about 6 o'clock, sunrise about 6 o'clock. So the end of the first watch is about 10 o'clock at night. Right? So we'll see in a minute why that's so important. So Ach Hakeim Hekimu Es HaShomrim, because at that point, the guards are just getting up. In other words, what's going on? It's the moment of the changing of the guard is the most vulnerable time to be attacked. Why? Because the first group that's been up for 4 hours, they're going to sleep. But most of the people are asleep anyway. So now it's just the guards. So now, the first guards are just going to sleep. The second guards, they just woke up from their sleep and they need a little time till they get a little bit more awake. So at that point of the change, there's a great vulnerability. That's what he's saying. Ach hokeim akim es hashofar. The guards are just getting up. And at that point, vayisku b'shofros, you'll blow the shofar. They came at that time. Right? And they just, the guards just changed. They blew the shofars. V'nafotz hakadim asher b'dam. And they threw those, jugs. They were in their hands. So that they would break. And that itself makes quite a bit of noise. Right, 300 jugs thrown to the ground. That's a kind of a smash. And they're blowing the shofars. Pasachav. And then everybody else follows suit. Vayisku'u shloshes harashim bashofros. And now the three different groups, the three groups that he made, they all blew the shofars. Vayishper akadim, and they broke their pitchers. Vayachaziku biyad smolam balapidim. And they took their torches in their left hand. Ubiyad yaminim ha-shofros, and they took in their right hand the shofros, let's go to blow. Vayikru, and they called out, here's the extra word now, cherev la-shem le-gidon. The sword belongs to Hashem, and not to Gidon. Does anybody have a question? No, and just a simple logistical, tactical question.
Yeah, if both hands were occupied, what were they gonna...
Exactly. Since one is a warrior, has the right hand as a chauffeur and the left hand as a torch. Great. How are you going
to
fight? The answer is, you're not. That's part of the miracle. It's part of the miracle. You don't have a sword in your hand. They don't have a sword in their hand. That is the whole deception that's being created. You're blowing chauffeur. Remember, it's dark. They don't have night vision. Hasn't been invented yet. Right? So it's dark, and you're asleep, and you get woken up, and you just look, and all of a sudden you see 300 torches in the dark, and you assume that torch represents a lot. They don't know that the troops have been reduced to 300. They know Gideon's calling troops together. They don't have a good idea how many troops, and there could be a lot of troops. There was 32,000 troops. It was at least something formidable. They don't know it's been down to 300. And could be every light represents 1,000 people, 100 people, whatever. And you hear the chauffeurs blowing 300, and usually it's every regiment has one chauffeur blower blowing, and it's dark, and you can imagine, guys just wakes up, lights and this, smash, bam, boom, right? So now they're going to get scared. So now, what's the point? Now, it's not Stam. Torah tells us the chauffeur was in the right hand, and the torch was in the left hand. So what's it telling us? So again, you understand mystically, it's very simple. What does shofar represent? What does shofar represent? It represents our connection to Hashem. Right? When we blow the shofar, the whole idea is when we blow the shofar, it brings out that we're able to get into the closest part to Hashem and Rosh Hashanah. We get very close to Hashem when we blow the shofar. That's why, for example, the shofar cannot come from a cow, and it cannot be laced with gold. Why not a cow? Why not gold? Because for the same reason, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen doesn't wear his garments that have gold, right? Because it reminds us of the golden calf. And a calf is a cow. And we don't want to have anything that came from a cow. We don't want anything to remind us of our past, because we say, Ein kategor nasa senegar. A defense attorney, a prosecuting attorney can't become a defense attorney. You can't come to Hashem. Can you imagine a guy, remember, the Egel Zov was like immorality. It was like adultery. That's how it's compared to. Can you imagine a guy once had an adulterous affair with a woman, and the woman gave him a beautiful gift. You know, gave him a very fancy watch. Right? It was a gift she gave affection during their affair. Right? Can you imagine the husband comes back to the wife, and he's wearing this watch, and the wife says, "That's a very nice watch. Where'd you get it from?" "Well, you know, Lolita gave it to me." She said, "Get rid of it." She says, "Oh, I think it's nice." "Get rid of it. It reminds me of things, and you feel an attachment to it. It's not good." So when you come to God in Yom Kippur, which ultimately was the atonement for the golden calf, you don't come with any gold, and you don't come with a calf. No, that's not allowed. So the shofar is really trying to bring about that same concept that we're going lifnai lifnim, we're getting in very close, like the Kohen Gadol would come in very close. So we don't have anything that resembles negative parts of the shofar. So obviously, what's happening? We are connecting to Hashem, and that really is the attribute of chesed, of kindness. Because what is kindness? Kindness is the idea of connecting, joining with others. When I'm kind to someone else, I'm joining. I'm expanding beyond my own private world and joining with someone else. You know, chesed mystically is on the right side. It's the right hand is chesed. Because we should be much more chesed than what's on the left side. What's on the left side is a lapid, is a torch. What's that? That's fire. What does fire represent? Fire consumes. Fire destroys. Fire takes something that's outside of your realm and takes it over and brings it into your realm. That's what fire does. You got this big fire, and now you got a piece of wood. Dump the piece of wood in. What happens? The piece of wood now becomes part of the fire. Becomes part of the fire. What is that reflective of? The attribute of gvura, control, and din, and judgment. Why? Because God's judgment always has to be. Either you listen to God, or as a fire, what does a fire do? When you listen, that means you're going under God's control. That's what Gvura is, self-control. You're allowing God to control you. You have the self-control to allow God to control you. So either you listen to God, or if you get punished, there's a fire. What's a fire do? Fire takes that which wanted to remain outside. Once it gets inside, it gets consumed and becomes part of the fire. And that's what judgment's all about. Judgment is, you think you can be outside of the law? The judgment will bring you inside of the law. And you get punished, and it shows you that you still have to be part of what the law is. So that's the left side is Gvura, and that we know we don't do too much of that, because we don't want people to get too destroyed. So more Chesed on the right side, Gvura on the left side. So they're showing the balance in the spiritual powers that they have. So they were prepared. So in Pasuk, the Malbim says that in Pasuk, Yutes, it says they were preparing to blow the shofars, right? And then they finally blow the shofars. They had not yet, even though it says where they blow, but Mom says they prepared to blow the shofars. Okay, so now so they call it out, Pasuk Chaf Aleph now. Vayamdu ish tachtov, saviv lamachane. So each man, all of the Jews stayed in his place around the camp. Each man stayed in his place. The Jews didn't do anything yet. They were just blowing the shofar, staying at the edge of the camp. Vayorotz kol ha-machane. Then the whole camp runs around. And then, vayoriu, then they blew they screamed, the enemy screamed, vayanisu, and they ran away. And the Malbim explains what happened is this is the description of the confusion. That once you hear that you're under attack, under surprise attack, people start running this way and that way in confusion, and you're making noise and you're running and this and that, and when you get all confused as they see what's happening, then back to Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vayisku Shoshmash HaShovers, now they blow it. In other words, first they broke down the jugs, made the noise, woke them up, they saw the torches, they said, uh-oh, we're surrounded, the enemy's starting to go crazy, and then, right then they blow the shofar, and then what happens, and here's the critical line, Hashem caused that each man's sword went into the other guy in the camp. Because you don't realize, when you think you're under attack, you think the enemy's already infiltrated. Remember, there's no light. You gotta remember, there's no light. So if there's no light, so you hear a bunch of people just getting up and running. Yeah, but it's on the outside. It's around. It's not in the camp. It's around. Where you're at, it's dark, but you see light over there. That means you see the troops are around you and, for all intents and purposes, have already come down to attack you. So you hear the jugs breaking. It could be like the sound of thumping or whatever. And now at the same time, 132,000 troops get up. Now, do you know they're all your friends? You have to realize it's in the dark. It's not like you see all your buddies in the day getting up. Oh, it's all our guys. It's dark. So for all you know, the guy next to you who's got a sword is a Jew. So now what's the Goyish mentality? What's the bottom line when you're in a war? Every man for himself. So the Goy knows one thing. There's somebody next to me, kill him. I don't care who it is. As long as I kill the guy next to me, I'll be okay. At the end of the day, you know, what do these soldiers want? They want to live. They don't care. They don't care who they kill. So be on the safe side. Whoever's next to you, just kill them. If you think you've already gone under attack, it means the guy next to you can potentially kill you. If you think you've been infiltrated, then you've been infiltrated. So, and usually they don't fight wars at night. It's not the smartest thing to do because you don't know who you're killing. Right? So that was the genius of this. Because it usually doesn't happen. So they went to test. So now what happens is, so you remember, you're asleep. So you're still in a daze. You now have all your wits with you. You gotta remember, well, how do you feel when you're woken up at 2 o'clock in the middle of the night? Right? Not only that, but you think somebody's right next to you with a sword that wants to kill you. I mean, you don't think things 100% clearly, but you, and then you hear the shofars blowing, under attack, where's my sword? Okay, oh, there's a guy next to me, and you just start killing because you want to protect yourself. What happens is they're all killing themselves. And Jews are just standing there watching. But here's the main point, is that they all killed each other, and the Jews didn't kill anybody. Vayonas hamachane ad beis hashita tzrei rosa. So the camp ran to, and there's only one way to go. You see the lights, imagine the perimeter lights are surrounding on three sides. So what do? You figure, I gotta run, they run the other way. Don't forget, Gideon's got those 22,000 troops waiting for when they're gonna escape. And those 22,000 troops, they do have swords. So they run to a place called Beis Shita by Tzreira, at Sfas, until the edge of a place called Avel Mechola Al Tabos. Alright? And then you're gonna see in Pasuk of Gimel, Vayitzaek Ish Yisrael. Now, the Jews, they gather up, Min Naphtali, Min Asher, from Naphtali to Asher, Min Kol Menasher, from all Menasher, Vayir Devarach Midian, and now they start chasing after Midian, and the battle will continue, and Mir Tzashem next week. We'll see how the battle finishes up.
What is the camp fled? Which camp?
No. The enemies. They ran away. Yeah, these places. They fled to these places.